Ladies and gentlemen, a very good afternoon and welcome to the Q4 FY24 earnings conference call of Exide Industries Limited. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star, then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Akash Gopani from Investec Capital. Thank you, and over to you, Mr. Gopani.
Thank you, Michelle. Good afternoon to you all. From Exide Industries, we have with us MD and CEO Mr. Avik Roy, Director of Finance and CFO Mr. Ashish Kumar Mukherjee, MD and CEO of subsidiary EESL Mr. Arun Mittal, President and Company Secretary Mr. Jitendra Kumar, and Head of Investor Relations Shravi Agarwal. Before we proceed, here is a disclaimer for the call. Few statements by the company's management in the call may be forward-looking in nature, and we request you to refer to the disclaimer in the earnings presentation for further details. We will start the call with brief opening remarks from the management, followed by Q&A session. I would now like to invite Mr. Avik Roy for his opening remarks. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you, Akash. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and a warm welcome to all of you who have joined the call. At the outset, I would like to take this opportunity to thank all our investors for their continued support and trust in the company. At Exide, our focus remains on delivering sustainable performance. We have taken multiple initiatives over the years to be future-ready, to make this company efficient, agile, innovative, and ready for the future. These are exciting times, and we are all well prepared to look forward to a promising future. Let me start by giving a flavor of the quarter that just passed by, the last Q4, and give you some color of the performance which we had in Q4. We consider it one of the strongest quarters we had in the recent past. We posted a sales growth of 13%, a double-digit revenue growth which was broad-based across the verticals that we play in. This was quite satisfying because it was not based on only one vertical, but all the verticals, more or less, they posted same level of performance. So we also reported one of the best operating profitability in the last few quarters, with the EBITDA margin expanding by 250 basis points to 12.9%. In the automotive vertical, we continued to do well in both OEM and aftermarket segments. Four-wheeler demand has made a good comeback in Q4 in both OE as well as the aftermarket. Exports also saw an uptick on the back of demand from Middle East. For the industrial vertical, the macros remain extremely positive, presenting opportunities across all end-market verticals. Most of our verticals, including institutional UPS, solar, traction, and infrastructure, have delivered solid double-digit sales growth during the quarter. Industrial exports have also shown resilience amidst harsh operating environment arising out of the geopolitical concerns. Let me give you a quick look at the full-year financials. We maintained a healthy sales growth momentum of 10%, driven by a strong volume growth and improved product mix. On the automotive side, the second half saw a strong pickup across all product categories. Aftermarket was impacted in the first half due to lower demand arising out of the lower vehicular sales in the COVID period, as replacement demand typically kicks in nearly 3 years after the OEM supplies. So the impact of the first lockdown in OEM sales impacted the aftermarket in the first two quarters of this year. We have a strong pan-India network of more than 115,000 channel partners, and we are also taking a lot of data-driven approach to identify areas that need further strengthening to serve our customers better. We also provide quick and efficient support through our Exide BackMobile doorstep service to our vehicular and inverter battery customers. This service is available in more than 300 cities, and the turnaround time is less than 2 hours. This is what we consider as our strength and the differentiator in the market. On the industrial side, an investment supercycle coupled with government focus on infra spend led to an accelerated demand, and we were very well positioned to benefit from these opportunities. Like last year, our key verticals such as UPS, solar, telecom, infrastructure, motive power have grown in high double digits, even at a high base. We continue to keep an eye on the future and have launched a series of innovative solutions for tomorrow. For example, Exide has forayed into this rooftop solar solutions, which we call Exide Sunday Solution. This is to encash the opportunities that has been thrown up by the Prime Minister Suryodaya Yojana recently. We have come out with special energy storage solutions for data center applications. We have come out with BESS, battery energy storage solutions for specific power applications. These are few innovations we have got into actively. We augmented our manufacturing capacities in areas that we believe are the clear growth hotspots for the future. Talking about margins, EBITDA margin has increased by nearly 100 basis points in the full year, growing by 19% in absolute terms. Our sharpened focus on operational efficiency and cost optimization led to lower operating costs. As a result, fixed costs as a percentage of sales have declined in the last 2 years. Even though raw material prices have largely remained range-bound in the last few quarters, we have taken calibrated price hikes which has supported the margin. Our digitalization initiatives continue to help us in streamlining our operations and be more efficient. Exide is now a true tech-enabled organization, which I'm very proud of. In the automotive channel partners, in the automotive sector, the channel partners connect directly to Exide from placing orders to channel finance to on-spot warranty decisions. This is the power of digitalization. Now talking about our lithium-ion cell manufacturing subsidiary, Exide Energy Solutions Limited. As mentioned in the presentation, the project is progressing very well on all fronts. We have a team of more than 300 professionals tirelessly supporting the execution across key functions: sales, manufacturing, procurement, R&D, IT, finance, quality, safety. Across the organization, we have manned our people. We are working towards onboarding new customers and securing raw material supplies, both in domestic as well as from international markets. Our recent alliance with Hyundai and Kia is a testimony of our technical expertise in the lithium-ion cell manufacturing space. So far, the parent company Exide Industries have invested ₹1,285 crore in FY24 alone. And with this, the total equity investment in EESL is ₹2,302 crores till March 24. In terms of the outlook for the lead acid business, the core business of Exide, the demand scenario remains upbeat in the near to medium term. In FY24 alone, domestic production of passenger vehicles reached close to a 5 million mark. This gels very well for our replacement business in the coming years. With rapid urbanization, increasing inter and interstate connectivity, demand is expected to remain high in the automotive vertical. Additionally, new opportunities like auxiliary batteries for electric vehicles are also rising. On the industrial side, the government's focus on infrastructure spend has worked as a major growth driver for the products and solutions that we have. Our exports has always been a focus, and it is getting even more focused now that we are going global as a company. Our focus is to strengthen our presence in the existing markets by offering new range of products such as, you know, the products which are suitable fit for the market. For example, AGM batteries for SLI applications and enhanced flooded batteries for SLI. We are also expanding geographically by placing resources in key markets to drive business growth and to provide prompt on-ground support to our customers and channel partners wherever required. So with this, I come to a close of my opening remarks. I'll be very happy to take your questions now. Over to you, Akash.
Thank you very much, sir. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask questions may press star and one on their touchtone phone. If you wish to withdraw yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use only handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. You may please press star and then one to ask questions. The first question is from the line of Vaibhav Joshi from JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my questions and congrats for a strong quarter as well as the MOU with Hyundai and Kia. My first question is basically on this partnership. Could you provide some more details around the potential size of this contract and also share if you are going to be the exclusive supplier of the cells? Basically, you know, Hyundai globally has announced building battery plants of 20 to 30 gigawatt hours with LG and SK Innovation. So just trying to understand whether Exide can also look at such scale of cell capacity over the longer term. So some more details on this partnership will be really helpful. Thank you.
Thanks, Vaibhav, for the question. Regarding this, we have already made a statement in the public domain, which you can refer to. Beyond that, you have to appreciate that we have signed a non-disclosure agreement with our client. So we have limitations in giving you more details at this stage. However, I'll request my colleague, Mr. Arun Mittal, MD and CEO of ESL, to throw some light on this based on the public disclosure that we made. Arun.
Sure. Yeah, so Vaibhav, you're aware, we have signed a non-binding agreement with Hyundai and Kia. So this is a global platform which Hyundai is developing. And till now, basically, they were using NMC chemistry from SK. And they are also realizing, Hyundai as a customer is realizing that there's a lot of merit in shifting to LFP chemistry. And looking at our readiness of our plant and, we being in a very sweet spot in being able to offer them local supplies, which is very critical for, all the OEMs going forward. So they have gone ahead and signed a non-binding agreement at this point in time. We are working on the details in terms of capacities and all that, and that is something which is still work in progress and has not been finalized. So I think the shift, which I can confirm, is from NMC to LFP. I think that is what has got them interested. And secondly, our readiness of the plant, which should be able to make them local supplies, because domestic value addition is a significant, aspiration of all the OEM manufacturers in the country. Thank you.
Right. Thank you. That's helpful. And just as a follow-up, so you have been mentioning in the past that margins in lithium-ion cell manufacturing for you won't be materially different from what you do in the lead-acid business due to the pricing advantages. Now, given that we are only a few quarters away from commissioning, would you be able to provide some color around margins, ROCs, any range, or would you stick to that guidance that it will be similar to what you do in the core business?
So I would request Mr. Mukherjee to take that question.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Is AK Mukherjee here? So, of course, we are in the process of, first starting the commercial production, and then there will be a stabilization process. And, of course, the margins will come when we reach the full capacity utilization. At that stage, we expect to be in the range of the mid-teens as far as margins are concerned. And the return on capital, of course, it depends also on the commodity prices. It's because while the margins we can expect to keep around mid-teens, but it also the absolute terms, it depends on the commodity prices. So
absolutely.
Yeah. So it is, I think it is too early to comment on that. I think going forward, closer to the dates or closer to that time, we can give more color to it.
Sure. Thank you so much. And my second question is on the lead-acid battery business. Given the strong volume growth that you've been seeing, for the last 2-3 years, any capacity expansion that you think would be required for this business, or is the current capacity enough to meet demand for the next few years?
So, Vaibhav, let me take this question. So you must have heard in public domain the top two auto manufacturers of the country, the way they are investing in their IC engine capacity. So we are in a reflected business, so obviously we have to take steps towards adjusting our capacity to the demand, which we are doing constantly. And we keep on doing that, and we'll adjust our capacity to meet the entire demand. We are investing in that.
Okay, so through the adjustments only you will be able to do it for now.
Yeah, generally, if you have seen our trend of the last couple of years, around the ballpark of 500 crore, which is more or less equal to our depreciation, that has been our capex outlay for lead acid business annually.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Okay. Thank you so much. That's very helpful. I'll come back in the queue.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Kapil Singh from Nomura. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Good afternoon, sir. My question is on the lead acid business. So just wanted to check, what is the demand outlook there for different segments? And also you mentioned rooftop solar. So if you could give your thoughts on what could be the competencies that Exide could have in this business.
Sure. So I'll first take the outlook on the some of the important segments, some of the largest segments. The way we have seen this year, the way we have seen the automotive production bouncing back in the last two quarters in H2, but particularly quarter four, and with the capacity addition plans of some of the major OEMs of the country, we're extremely bullish on our aftermarket potential after 3 years. We have maintained our market share very strongly in this environment, and we think we should be able to do it. More urbanization, more mobility, more intra-city as well as intercity mobility, and more there is a demand for passenger vehicles. And we think that we'll be able to ride on this demand. On the industrial space, as I have already mentioned in the opening remarks, we are benefiting out of the infra capex of government, the infra capex outlay, number one. And you have to understand our business is a kind of a battery business, is a short cycle business, which generally happens at the late cycle of the capex. So whatever capex programs or announcements or the outlays you see today, actually these projects will result in our business maybe 12 to 18 months later. So whatever growth we are seeing now is basically a tail end of the earlier cycle as well as the short cycle business which we do in the aftermarket of industrial space. So this gives us a lot of confidence, and we are also preparing ourselves in terms of competence and in terms of capacity to ride on this. Various outlooks, the outlooks vary from segment to segment. The IUPS segment is riding on the purely on more and more data usage and data penetration in the country. The need for critical power is increasing. It's no longer a power backup. It's more of critical power. Healthcare, hospitals, banks, schools, and everywhere you see this requirement of UPS going ahead. This digital UPI payment has led to a lot of opportunities in UPS business in rural India. Similarly, renewables, I don't need to mention, you are all reading in the newspapers the future renewable has for this country. The other segment which has come back actually is basically the thermal power segment. The thermal power generation and power transmission segment, which was lying dormant for last 6 years or 8 years maybe, it has come back. And this is where we see an incremental huge demand year on year, which will continue, I'm told, for the next 5 to 6 years to just complete the ongoing projects. So this is more or less the flavor of the outlook for the future. Regarding rooftop solar, let me tell you that we are actually trying to organize an otherwise unorganized sector. We are using the power of Exide brand to a consumer, the service which they were getting from local unorganized sectors in terms of rooftop installations. And what are we providing as a value? You may have noticed that we are designing the complete solution for them. We are designing and we are using technology for that from remote from our office through GPS activated devices. We are, designing the plan for the layout of the roof and designing a solar solution for them. And we are installing it for them, and we are giving a 5-year comprehensive warranty on the total solution, not on individual products only. So this gives a lot of confidence to the consumer that they have Exide brand to stand behind them for any kind of service requirement or warranty requirement. So this is how we are generally leveraging on the power of our brand and the quality of our service. Does that answer your question?
Yes, sir. Thanks. Also, just on the lithium-ion business, had one question. Just in terms of pricing policy for sales, what are we following in general? Is it a cost-plus model or is it a fixed-price model? And how does our pricing compare to current pricing in China? And also, if you could talk about, you know, at what level of utilization does that facility break even?
So I'll request Arun to take this question, please.
Yeah. So this lithium-ion pricing, battery pricing is normally indexed, to the major raw material. This is a standard practice which is being followed. And we plan to follow the same indexed approach so that, any increase or decrease in raw material prices is passed on to the customer, number one. Number two, as far as the pricing of current pricing of lithium-ion batteries is concerned, as far as customers are concerned, they are looking at parity of imported landed. So I think as a company, we also have to offer prices which are at par with imported landed. So we have a comprehensive agreement with S-Volt, which entails also helping us in setting up the supply chain, and we will leverage on their buying kind of volumes. We will club our volumes with their volumes, and we will be also able to source raw materials competitively with S-Volt sourcing, and that gives us the confidence that we should be in a position to offer prices which are at par with imported landed. And regarding your second question, I think Mr. Mukherjee already answered that. Once we reach 80 to 90% of capacity utilization, I think that is the time where we can hit our intended margin.
So my question was, sir, thanks for that. My question is not an intended margin. My question is, what is the break-even capacity utilization?
Sorry, can I just, your voice cracked. Can you just repeat your question? I just lost your voice.
Yeah, what I was checking is, what is the capacity utilization for break-even of this facility? Say, EBITDA break-even is possible at what percentage utilization?
So, break-even, I think we should be able to do at 50 to 60% capacity utilization.
Understood. Thank you, sir, and wish you all the best.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Jinesh Gandhi from Ambit Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. My question pertains firstly a clarification on arrangement with S-Volt. So we have a agreement to pay variable royalty, or it's on fixed technical fee basis?
So
this
royalty,
yeah,
thing is not in the public domain. So we would request you to, not press us for this information. This is something which is not in the public domain.
Okay, but it's royalty basis, not the technical fee basis. Got it. And the second question pertains to, again, continuing on the lithium-ion side. So when we say non-binding agreement with Hyundai and Kia Group, it means there is no concrete, there's no clarity on what kind of volumes of take will be there or pricing or that way. What do you mean by non-binding agreement?
So non-binding agreement basically means that, both the parties intend to work together, right? And between non-binding to binding, a lot of loose ends have to be tied up in terms of the entire timelines of the plan, in terms of the, development of the cell with the help of S-Volt, in terms of, setting up additional plant and machinery for meeting their particular requirements. So I think there's a lot of work to be done. So all that work is still work in progress, and as soon as it materializes, I think that is the time we'll probably be able to share more information. Right now, okay, as we said, this is still work in progress.
Okay. And this would not be an exclusive arrangement which Hyundai will be having with us for the Indian market.
So let me tell you this, so the way it works is that when a vehicle manufacturer, and particularly I speak in reference to passenger vehicles, when they partner with a battery manufacturer, the entire development, it is, done jointly. It is kind of a co-development, actually.
Okay.
So both the battery manufacturer and the vehicle manufacturer, they work very closely in terms of, optimizing the energy density, or optimizing the space, optimizing the cost, quality, everything, right?
Okay.
So this is more of a partnership, and in these kind of programs, it is normally not a practice to work with multiple partners from battery sourcing point of view. So Hyundai for this particular model, would be exclusive to Exide, and that is because this is the global practice. No OEM works for one program with multiple battery manufacturers, because that increases the complexity and the variables.
Got it. Now, this is very insightful. Lastly, with respect to the lithium, so from here on, you indicated we have invested close to 2,300 crores so far. What would be the balance investment?
Yeah, Mr. Mukherjee can answer this question.
Yeah, as of now, we have invested 2,000 crores in EESL, and of course, the other unit, which is a pack and module making unit, that invested earlier, we invested about 300 crores. So put together, it comes to around 2,300 crores. Now, total investment as in the phase one in capex will be approximately around 5,000 crores.
Okay.
So, and we'll definitely. We are quite confident of financing this project. Initially, there will be some bridge loan, because cash inflow and outflow, there is always a mismatch, and the project cannot wait for the cash flow to happen. So there will be bridge loan initially for certain amount, and which we are confident enough to repay over a period of time.
Right, right. But Mr. Mukherjee, what would be incremental further investment from Exide into EESL?
Investment for the current year, we expect to invest around 1,000 crores.
Okay, okay. And balance 2,000 crores would be through bridge loans?
As of now, but it all depends on the cash flow. And as I said, that this loan will be kind of a bridge loan whenever it's required, depending on the cash flow of the core business, we're confident of repaying it.
Got it. And last question for the fourth quarter performance. So we have seen a very good improvement in margin in fourth quarter vis-a-vis third quarter. So this would have been driven by what, mix and price increases, or we have seen anything else also? And what kind of price increases we have taken in replacement market in fourth quarter?
So last question first. We haven't taken major price increases in fourth quarter, but we have been taking calibrated price increases throughout the year as and when it favored us. To answer your question about the fourth quarter margin expansion over Q3, there are a couple of things which favored us. One is, of course, our core raw material lead. We had a favorable lead environment in Q4, which was better than last year's Q4 also, as well as the sequential quarter also. We also had a better mix in terms of two things. One is, our high margin product sold more than the low margin product across the verticals. The third reason is that also our trade to OEM ratio improved in fourth quarter. So that improvement, maybe, at a very high base, even 1-2% shift of that ratio creates a lot of favorable impact on the company's bottom line. And most importantly, we have been undergoing this cost optimizing initiative for the last 2 years, particularly on factory costs. So that project is almost coming to an end, and the results are starting accruing. So fourth quarter, we got some favorable benefits from those cost optimizing initiatives also, which we'll see more and more in this fiscal year. So all this put together has created a favorable bottom line environment for us in the Q4.
Got it. Got it. This is very helpful. Thanks, and all the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Arjun Khanna from Kotak Mahindra Asset Management. Please go ahead.
Sure. Thank you for taking my question, and congratulations on good set of numbers on the fourth quarter. So my first question is, on the lithium-ion side, in terms of yields, et cetera, are there any agreements that we have with SVOLT in terms of the output? And are there any milestone-based payments that would accrue to them that we would need to pay in this year or next year?
Arun?
Yeah. So the agreement what we have with SVOLT is exhaustive. It covers, you know, four aspects. One is the transfer of IPs and designs for the intended cell, what we intend to manufacture. Second is helping us in design and setting up of the plants and procurement of capital equipment. Third is, you know, to help us in setting up the supply chain from China, because unfortunately, supply chain does not exist in India. And lastly, also to help us in, you know, ramping up the production and, you know, help us in achieving the required yields. So it's a very comprehensive agreement with SVOLT, covering all these four aspects. And, of course, you know, the payment terms, I would not like to discuss, because that is something which is not in the public domain.
Sir, I just wanted to understand, would the payments be front-ended, or they would be over the lifetime of the project?
No, these are milestone-based, you know.
Right.
This agreement spans over these four, you know, broad, you know, areas of collaboration.
Right. Sir, since we are on the lithium-ion, sir, in terms of phase two, at what point in time we take the call on going ahead with it? Would it be 1-2 years after phase one commences production, we scale up, or phase two would probably happen quicker? Just current thoughts at this point in time.
So I think, you know, as soon as we have a visibility for, you know, kind of evacuation of our phase one capacity, we start planning for phase two. Phase two will be much faster, because the entire, you know, the entire project, entire land has been developed, all the utilities are already in place. So it is just, you know, kind of a very short cycle we'll be able to set up the additional capacity, and that we will do as soon as we see the visibility of evacuating the phase one capacities.
Sure. So my second set of questions were on the lead-acid side. We did mention some of our key export segments, such as motive power, et cetera. Are we seeing a decline in motive power, given that the world is moving towards advanced cell chemistries?
See, on the motive power front, this is not so much driven or decided by the consumer, customer. It's driven by the OEM and their strategies for sustainable goals. Now, just to give you one sense, on the vehicular space, the shift is from IC engines to batteries, which means from fossil fuel to electric. So likewise, in motive power, you already have electrified forklift, which is running on lead-acid today. So that diesel to electric shift is happening, but diesel to lithium-ion is not a mandate for the market. So we see more and more electrification in favor of lead-acid batteries.
Okay.
Now, some of the OEMs have come out with lithium. There are applications, but we don't see a threat in it, because when we talk to our customers and even some of the OEMs, this will be part of their portfolio, but this will take a long, long time to become their core business. There are many reasons for that. I'm not going into the detail, but you have to also understand that in some of the rich trucks and forklift trucks, the lead-acid battery, which is much heavier than lithium-ion packs, also work as a counterweight.
Perfect.
So this is something we see a value in it, and so far, the innovative products which we and many of the players in this space are developing on the lead-acid side, to increase the cycle life of a lead-acid battery, we see that the global penetration of lithium-ion will be much slower than electric vehicle. We are not worried about it. In any case, you must appreciate that we have very little world market share.
Right.
Till that we reach a 60%-70% market share, there is a whole lot of opportunities for all of us.
No, perfect. This is very good to hear, sir. Thank you. Sir, just the last part to this, sir. In terms of margins, we had given a guidance, maybe we had not as a hard guidance, but our trajectory is that, 12%-14% EBITDA margin range is what we are comfortable on the lead-acid side. We have obviously moved closer to that zone at this point in time. How difficult do you believe would be for us to maintain this in this band? Are there risks that for next quarter or the quarters after we may come below?
See, first thing, I'll just take the first sentence and then hand over to Mr. Mukherjee. You have to understand, we are dealing with our product deals with a commodity which is hugely volatile. Commenting, giving a guidance based on a volatile commodity will not be proper for either you or me. Having said that, we have taken a lot of other operational actions to sustain our margins, and we have declared that also that we'll reach our pre-COVID margin levels within a short time, and we maintain that. I hand over to Mr. Mukherjee to give you further color on this.
Yes. As Mr. Roy said that, you know, first thing I would say that, I do not give any guidance on the margin, for the future. Our objective, as Mr. Roy said that, we are engaged with some cost optimization initiatives and which have started giving results. We definitely expect our margin to stabilize at pre-COVID level. There will be, of course, fluctuations quarter to quarter because, you know, the commodity prices are extremely volatile. It of course, over a period of time it is passed through to the market, but it doesn't happen on an online basis. There is always a lag, so at times it affects the margin to that extent.
Sure. Thank you, and wishing you all the best.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you. Participants, you may please press star and then one to ask questions. The next question is from the line of Nishit Jalan from Axis Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Hi. Thank you for the opportunity and congratulations on good set of numbers. I have two questions on the lithium-ion battery business, right? Good to see that Hyundai MOU. Any more such customers where you are working with or where you have started getting orders, big incumbent OEMs, in terms of whether orders or MOUs? Because your plant will get commissioned towards the end of the year. How should we look at a commissioning of that plant and what kind of orders you have already received? That is number one. Number two, since you mentioned yourself that supply chain for battery doesn't exist anywhere except China, what kind of localization, what are the key areas where we are doing localization, and what would be the localization content that we could have in our battery plant?
Arun.
Let me take the second question first. You know, the supply chain follows the capacity of the batteries. Unless there's a capacity of 50 GWh in the country, the supply chain will not be, you know, we will not see a, you know, a good growth in supply chain here. Having said that, there are some large players who have, you know, spelled out their intention of setting up local supply chain. Himadri Chemical, for example, is one large player which has shown interest in setting up capacities for the LFP CAM and also for the anode material. Similarly, we have another set of companies who are looking at, you know, various, you know, active and passive components which go into a battery. The short answer is that as we see more and more battery capacity coming up in the country, the automatically supply chain will follow the battery capacities. Regarding your, can you just please repeat your first question?
My first question, sir, sorry, first a follow-up on this. Yes, you're right that industry needs to start first and then we will see localization happening of other components. When we start our plant or start manufacturing in the first year, it will largely be import-based. Is it fair to assume that?
Yes.
Import content will be fairly high?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. My first question was on basically order wins from OEM. So we are starting our plant. So like we have
I have a constraint in disclosing the names of the customers because
not the names without disclosing the names. If you can give some color, if you have got orders from any incumbent big two wheeler or four wheeler OEMs which will start in which will get into production as you start the plant, right? Because we will be starting our plant towards the end of this financial year, right?
So maybe what I can share at this point of time is, the telecom industry is moving to, lithium-ion batteries. And I think we have started our, commercial supplies to tower companies. And on the automotive side, we are working with two-wheeler, three-wheeler, four-wheeler, and the bus companies. All sets of customers we are working. And these are at various stages of engagement with the customer. We have a very high level of confidence that we should be able to evacuate our full capacity, closer to, as soon as we are able to ramp up the production and stabilize the production.
Okay, that would be great, sir. So, just one more follow-up. I'm not asking for any non-public information, but just to understand how it works. So, when you sign an MOU, how much time can it take to translate that into an order and you start supplying them? And is there a possibility that even after signing an MOU that does not translate into an order?
So, let me answer the first question first. If it is already a developed cell, with either Exide or S-Word, then the lead time for supplies is very short actually. So, for example, if the customer is interested in taking up one of the cells which we intend to buy, and this is already in production with S-Volt in China, then I think the lead time for supplies can be very, very short actually. For example, many of the three-wheeler customers or telecom customers are planning to take a particular cell which is in mass production in S-Volt, and we also plan to make in India. So this is something which, gets into a smooth kind of migration from China to India as soon as the plant ramps up, right? But if it is a new cell development, then it normally takes a year of time to develop the and design the cell and validate the cell. So this is the difference between an existing cell and a new cell. And I think have I answered your question?
So the only part which is left is there a possibility that even after signing an MOU, it does not translate into an actual order and supplies?
So, a non-binding MOU means that there can be a slip between the cup and the lip. Having said that, I would only mention this, that this was a global announcement by Hyundai. Right, and we are very actively engaged with Hyundai in, in terms of the next steps in deciding on the capacities to be built up for that cell and the development and all that. So, I would say that these chances would be very, 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 very minimal of not getting converted into an order.
And this will be for Hyundai India, right? Whenever it translates into an actual supply order.
Yeah, it is basically for these platforms are global platforms, as I mentioned earlier. But and these global platforms are, like whatever vehicles Hyundai makes in India, these are exported all over the world. So it is a global platform. This will be made in India. And they wish to procure these cells locally made in India. And these vehicles will be sold in India and all over the world, actually. That is the whole plan.
Okay. Sir, one question, one clarification.
I'm sorry to interrupt, sir. I would request to kindly rejoin for follow-up questions, please.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, sir. We'll take the next question from the line of Deepak Jain from Enam AMC. Please go ahead.
So, congrats on good numbers. So, my question is that on PLI, have you opted out or can you give some clarification on that?
Yes, sir. You can take
PLI.
Yeah. So, as you all know, PLI, you know, is only meant for greenfield projects. And since we have progressed so much into the project, it was difficult for us to meet the tender conditions, which are basically one of the conditions in the tender stipulates that the construction has to start after the signing of the agreement with the Government of India. So that made it very difficult for us, and that is the reason that we did not participate in the PLI.
Okay. So my next question is your the agreement with Hyundai. You said it is for one global model. So does the you know, negotiation with other customers also happen model wise? Because I believe Hyundai is planning to launch 3-4 EVs globally by till 2030. So it is model by model a negotiation.
So I said the platform. So, you know, the models can be on the same platforms. So right now what we are talking of and what is relevant to us is a platform. So, so one particular platform what we are working with Hyundai, we plan to give one of the cells of LFP prismatic type.
Okay. And sir, can you give the order book of EESL?
So I think we have a strong order book, you know, from like last September, we are having an order book of 600-700 crores, and we see a strong pipeline going forward.
Okay. So my last question is on lead acid. Can you tell me the value and volume growth for Q4?
Well, for the... Hello?
Yes.
Yes, sir, please proceed.
The value growth is 13% that we already announced.
Okay.
The volume growth is around that number. As I said, volume was a key driver for that value growth for us. So, around that number only.
Okay. Okay, sir. Thank you. All the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Diya Brijwani from White Whale Partners. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Thanks for the opportunity. My question was, how are we looking to fulfill the EPR obligation? I understand that we have an internal recycling unit, but just wanted a sense of your your perspective on how are things on ground and what's the penalty levied in case of non-compliance.
So, let me request our company secretary and chief compliance officer, Mr. Jitendra Kumar, who's in the call, to respond to that.
So, this EPR certificate, as we understand, this is coming out of this BWMR requirement. And what we understand that this is still work in progress in terms of quantification of the entire obligations. We understand that this portal is still being developed by the CPCB. So we are ready at our end, but as soon as we get more clarity on this portal, more clarity on those rates and quantification of the liability, then we will be able to. But as far as we are concerned, we are confident that we are more or less meeting our requirement as of now. And depending upon how this situation pans out, then we will see the, we will quantify the requirement outflow on the EPR obligations.
Got it. Just to follow up on this, so how do you ensure, I mean, how do you manage the supply chain for the chloride plant? Don't you see any leakages towards informal recycling guys, given that they offer a higher price to the dealers? So just wanted your sense as to how do you procure these used lead acid batteries?
So let me take this question. Chloride metals is a very important material subsidiary that we have within Exide Industries, and almost more than 60-70% of our requirement is fed by chloride metals, which includes even pure lead procurement and things like that. And we have multiple sources of, you know, collecting used batteries. And one of the major sources, of course, imports, which we are actively engaged in, and we are increasing our shares of collecting imported batteries. This is to feed the lines.
And as far as fulfilling our BWMR obligations, we have opened up new channels through our sales team, activated them to increase collections from our dealer network, from the B2B businesses. We participate in auctions and get these collections. So it, from the industries, we make a collection. So these, some of the customers or most of the customers, they also have, they also want to deal with people like us. So we have been fairly successful, and that is why my colleague told you that we are well prepared to meet this obligation. And I think we are best placed because we have our own recycling unit, for which also we are investing in augmenting the capacity. So chloride metal themselves are also investing in increasing their smelting capacity. So more and more, whatever we pick up, we can recycle it in-house within the group. So I think we are much more prepared on this than many of our competitors because we have this in-house recycling facility ourselves.
So how much is the percentage of imports which is used for the recycling plant?
At this moment, I don't think it's fair for me to give a percentage. But overall, because this is related to chloride metals, Exide does not import, chloride metals imports. So I would not like to give an exact percentage for chloride metals because it's not in public domain. But all I can tell you, chloride metal today supplies about 60 to 65% of Exide's lead requirement, which is only to go up because they are also, they also plan to invest in their capacity.
Got it. Cool. Thanks. That's it from my side.
Thank you.
Thank you. We'll take the next question from the line of Aditya from Investec. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for the opportunity. Sir, and congratulations on good set of numbers and congratulations and partnership with Hyundai. Sir, I mean, it's very heartening to hear this partnership for the four-wheeler battery. Similarly, if you can give us some light on the two-wheeler side, has there been any development? So once our cell capacity comes on stream, we can clearly supply to our, you know, our next charge facility in Ahmedabad. But beyond that, have we entered into any discussions for supplying lithium-ion cells to any two-wheeler manufacturer, whether incumbent or a new age company? And if you can throw some light on this aspect.
Yes, I'll request Arun to take this question, please.
Yeah. So, Aditya, we are in active discussions with the, all the two-wheeler manufacturers who have electric wheel program. And these discussions are at the various stage for supply of cells and stroke packs. Since we have an NDA, you know, I am under constraint not to reveal any specific details at this point of time. But as and when the agreements mature and there is a public disclosure, you know, we all will come to know through it. But just to reinforce that we are in active discussion with most of the two-wheeler manufacturers who have electric vehicle program.
Okay, okay. Sir, and just, you know, one thing on our partnership with S-Fold, as of now, we are partnership for NMC and LFP battery. That is for automotive application. And over a period of time, are we also working on, you know, application on the industrial side, whether it is, you know, storage wall or these kind of application for storage, or is there a separate agreement that we need to do?
So, Aditya, these cells, what we plan to make, the LFP prismatic cells, these cells, electric vehicle application or for industrial application, these cells, you know, the we are planning to make four types of cells, and these cells have, you know, applications on both automotive side and industrial side. So certainly we have plans of using S4 cells and technology for industrial applications also.
Okay. And sir, is there any restriction from S4 side for tapping some export opportunity if you have, you know, either directly exporting or, you know, supplying to OEM who export that vehicle?
So these technology collaboration agreements normally have a territory clause, but there is no blanket, you know, ban or something. It is
the agreements normally, you know, allow both the parties to discuss mutually and take a call on a case-to-case basis.
Okay, and sir, the final question on S4. So now, do you think, you know, so earlier, I mean, our impression was that S4 and Excite partnership with exclusivity. But do you think that the way things are progressing at a rapid pace, EV volumes are ramping up, do you think that S-World, you know, can potentially partner directly with an OEM, or it has to go via Excite only?
I think these are final aspects of the agreement which is not in the public domain, Aditya, and I would not like to make a comment on this at this point of time.
Sure, sure. Perfect, sir. That's it for me, sir. All the best. Thank you.
Thank you, Aditya.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Apurva from Whitestone Financial Advisors Private Limited. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Thanks for the opportunity. Sir, I have one question regarding the lithium-ion cell manufacturing plant. What is the asset turnover we are looking for this plant?
So, Mr. Mukherjee will answer this question.
Yeah, as I said earlier also, because these absolute numbers, it's very difficult to give now because, you know, first thing, we are just constructing the plant, and then we have to start with the commercial production, then stabilization process. And then when we reach that full capacity utilization, all these questions come. But it also depends on the commodity prices at that point of time. So very difficult to answer now. As I said, that there is some outlook on the margins we can expect at the full capacity utilization. But I think closer to those dates, we can give more clarity on the return on capital or the, you know, asset turnover.
Okay. So just like some ballpark number, like for example, if we take the price which is going as of today maybe, so like what number do we come at, like for maybe the revenue potential asset turnover? Just to get an exact, some numbers in the mind.
See, it will be more of a theoretical in because there is, I don't think the situation will be remain on the same level. So, I think it's more realistic to give closer to the date.
Okay. Actually, at this moment for lithium-ion, there is no industry benchmark in India. Possibly that's why all of you are struggling. But once the local capacities come up, you will also have an industrial benchmark so that you can compare who's better than whom and things like that. We are also that is a kind of a disadvantage of being the first. But we'll be able to give you more color going forward.
Okay. Okay, and so my next question is regarding, as mentioned that around 5,000 crore is required for the phase one, right? So out of that, how much is from internal approvals and how much we have taken from loan?
Yeah. As of now, you know, our outlook is we have already invested 2,000 crores.
Mm-hmm.
And as I said, that we are quite confident enough to finance this project from our internal accrual without compromising anything, any investment requirement for the core business.
Mm-hmm.
But we cannot finance it at one go. So there will be some bridge loans in this, and which we are confident to repay over a period of time. And so out of total 5,000, we have already invested 2,000 crores in the last financial year. And going forward also, we are confident enough to infuse capital depending on the cash flow situation.
Okay, so mostly it would be from internal accruals, the remaining 3,000.
Right? From internal accruals, but you know, cash flow doesn't happen like this. It happens over a period of time, cash inflow.
Mm-hmm.
But the project, we cannot delay the project just waiting for the cash flow to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to take some loan just to bridge that gap, and which that will be of course in the subsidiary ESL books, the bridge loan. Depending on the cash flow situation from the core business, we can increase further capital and the loan can be repaid from there.
Okay. Okay. And sir, my last question is on the lead acid battery side. So what percentage do we sell in aftermarket?
So the aftermarket share is at this moment about 75% of the total automotive trade business, 25% being roughly from 20% from being in OEM and about 5% from exports. That's the split. It has improved over this quarter. Yeah.
Thank you, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, that was the last question for today. I would now like to hand the conference over to the management for closing comments. Over to you, sir.
Yeah. Just give me a second. So thank you, everybody. Thank you for your participation. It was very engaging and encouraging to answer to all your questions. I hope we have been able to answer the question satisfactorily. However, if you have any further questions or would you like to know more about the company, we would be happy to be of assistance. So please get in touch with us. Thank you.
Thank you, members of the management. On behalf of Investec Capital, that concludes this conference. We thank you for joining us and you may now disconnect your lines. Thank you.